This week here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're concentrating on the subject of pain. In many of the medical, all of the medical marijuana states for that matter, chronic pain is a qualifying condition for the use of medical marijuana. And yet many people out there, particularly in law enforcement, don't seem to think that there is such a thing as marijuana for pain management. So we're joined again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine here in our cannabis science segment. I thought we'd bring up the subject of cannabis and pain. So, Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Now, you and I were conversing in an email about this situation where people in VA hospitals, especially when they are undergoing, if they're caught using medical marijuana, they don't get access to their regular pain medication. Is this the truth? Is this awful?
This is really a rough decision, and I think an egregious error on the part of the VA system. And I understand their concern, but basically, if any vet tests positive for THC metabolites in the urine, they're no longer eligible for opiate meds for pain. And I really feel like these are two medications that can go really well hand in hand. And cannabis, of course, has fewer of the negative consequences and some of the bad side effects that are common in the opiate meds. And if we got a second here, I just want to sort of walk through how that works.
Sure.
Everybody sort of knows about the opiate effects on pain, and these are really incredible drugs that go back to at least 6400 BC as far as their pain-relieving qualities have been known. But they do have some rough consequences, some that people don't like to talk about. They're really, really rapid in their development of tolerance. So 2-Vicodin doesn't do what 2-Vicodin did by the time you're on the sixth one. And unfortunately, they're almost always paired with aspirin in a pain-relieving, you know, attempt, but actually in a way that ends up exposing folks to liver problems because aspirin can be very difficult for the liver to break down. So here's a chance to essentially keep your opiate meds to a minimum by using cannabis as a pain reliever. The laboratory evidence for cannabis as a pain reliever is splendid in modern times, but the pharmacopoeia of, you know, the legendary ancient Chinese emperor Shenang back in 2737 BC also said, hey, this is really good for pain. So, I mean, we literally have thousands of years of data suggesting this is a wonderful pain reliever. As we saw earlier this year in some data that were published, the response is basically an inverted U. So there's sort of a peak right in the middle where the best pain-relieving effects are. Not enough doesn't do it, and too much doesn't do it, but just right, as you will, the sort of three bears model will keep pain to a minimum. And folks who can use cannabis then can decrease their consumption of these opiate meds, keeping them from developing a lot of tolerance on these, and also keeping that exposure to aspirin and some of the things that are often paired with these opiates to a minimum.
And I think it's particularly egregious here in the case of the Veterans Administration decision when we're talking about, you know, a lot of veterans using cannabis not just for pain but for treatment of psychiatric disorders like PTSD.
It's curious because, I mean, I do feel like some of the exposure-based psychological treatments for PTSD are still best, but a lot of folks, either, you know, by their own decision or because of some of the availabilities of those treatments, have decided to turn to cannabis instead. And I think that that's, of course, they're right. And in truth, I mean, the things these guys have been through. I was at the VA in Jackson for a year, and I think they should be able to do whatever they want after enduring what some [S2] Sure. [S1] Of them have endured. And the idea that now they're going to essentially lose not only, you know, another pain medication, but really access to a whole lot of important aspects of their medical care is really, I think, a shame, a real problem.
Well, it's also flying in the face of a lot of the research that we've seen this year. I've reported at least three stories that you and I have talked about the use of cannabis as a superior pain management for neuropathic pain. So some of these vets that are coming back with amputations and other sorts of pain that are more neuropathic, now we're denying them any sort of cannabis for that in the non-medical marijuana states. And then if they use it in the medical marijuana states, they can't get their opiate-based pain relievers.
I think neuropathic pain is, in fact, a prime example because that's one that we really understand so little about, and it shows what a mystery, you know, the human body is, and also how pain tends to ebb and flow in curious ways. So there is no single solution to pain, including not only medical things, but also psychological and just lifestyle interventions that can all contribute. But we've got to use every arrow in our quiver, so to speak. We need to have a full armament in order to really make sure that folks who are experiencing chronic pain can still have productive lives. And the bottom line is it turns them into taxpayers again.
Like, yeah.
You know, if you've got a functional person, what a surprise. They can go out and work and have a great life. And if they really can't because they're denied access to medicine, well, you know, what a shame. We've got somebody else who's really not living the kind of life you could live.
And this and we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but this newest research that shows that cannabis helps to improve the effect of the opioids, is that another thing that is missing in this discussion?
See, and that's an interesting finding, and one that you can imagine is difficult to work on in the lab. It's hard enough to get to give somebody cannabis in the laboratory as it is, but I'm going to, you know, propose giving them both opiates and cannabis in the lab.
Yeah.
You know, the ethics committees just jump up and down and go a little nuts. But there's literally hundreds of anecdotal cases of folks who claim this. The other thing I really want to emphasize is opiate abusers, people who are addicted to heroin, intravenous, you know, opiates and things like that, actually don't like cannabis because it sort of takes the opiate high away. And I think very few people understand this. This is not some, you know, intoxication cocktail. This is folks really trying to make sure that they can have the most productive day they want. I think the key here is, too, people misunderstand chronic pain and don't understand the severity but also the persistence of it. So if you've ever had a bad headache, well, imagine having that every single day. I mean, sure, anybody can take it for a little while, but this is day after day after day. So you can imagine the comorbid depression, all the anxiety, stress, interpersonal conflict with family members, and just general, you know, malaise that seems to accompany this. And to turn this around could have just such a dramatic impact.
Mm. Well, for our listeners out there who may or may not be veterans or may not be in medical marijuana states, in general, what could we offer them in the way of advice as far as managing chronic pain, even with or without cannabis?
What's been really impressive in the behavioral medicine literature and in the interventions that you can do with this all boils down to some of the same things we've known for stress management. So if people are willing to spend even just 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening with a relaxation exercise, something as simple as just sitting down and listening to your favorite tunes without any distractors, it's stunning what an impact that has. If you're interested in the idea of biofeedback, it doesn't have to be this big elaborate thing with wires and things like that. If you can just get a little cheapo thermometer from your hardware store and tie it around your finger and sit quietly and see what you can do to think about thoughts of like sunlight on your hands or spicy food or things like that and try to get your blood flow to the extremities, particularly to your hands again, it's also astounding how that not only decreases blood pressure but seems to alter chronic pain. And then some of the things that nobody seems to think of, but it works in remarkable ways. So just scheduling your day in a way that makes sure you don't overdo things. And everybody says, oh, I can't do that. But in fact, as you start getting more and more assertive and really following the things that make you feel good and letting some things go if they're just going to be a hassle, it's astounding how your mood improves. Usually then the sleep improves. And then once the sleep improves, the pain tends to improve. And as you can imagine, that whole pain, sleep problem combination can be a really dastardly situation. So the opportunity is there to improve sleep and then subsequently improve pain, and then suddenly mobility and just how much you get done in a day, mood, all those things really improve.
Aside from the overexertion or overstressing oneself, are there any medications or activities people who are suffering chronic pain should avoid?
It's curious because some of the stimulants seem to exaggerate. So caffeine, of all things, can exaggerate pain responses. If you happen to be, you know, a big fan of coffee and things like that, by all means, moving to half-calf or even decaf seems to have an interesting impact. And then depending upon your medical situation, things like yoga, stretching, and standard light but brisk exercise seems to go very, very well as far as these things are concerned, too. Things that they really should avoid are always just overexertion. So anything that's going to, you know, cause an impact on the painful area is clearly a no-no. In contrast, if you've got time for a nice hot bath at the end of the day, boy, it can make all the difference.
It's the old Henny Youngman joke, doctor, it hurts when I do that. Well, then don't do that.
Exactly.
How about foods? Is there any, as far as diet that can help, or is that make much difference in pain management?
We haven't seen a lot of systematic work on that, although some folks, if they do a really big sugar load, so, you know, you sit down and eat a whole pint of Häagen-Dazs, you do get this lethargic insulin reaction that tends to exacerbate sensitivity to a whole lot of negative things, including pain.
Hmm. Okay. Well, those are all good things to keep track of, and we'll follow this issue. Like I said, all week we're talking about this and various aspects of pain management. Dr. Earlywine is the Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York at Albany, joins us every week here on Cannabis Science. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Mitch.
Thanks so much, Russ.